yes, we are the largest producers of fossil fuels and greenhouse gases, but we are taking accountability for our actions by uplifting our client base, by uplifting our employees in a way that is genuine, in a way that they can feel dignified about receiving this relief.
Welcome to Smart Energy Voices, an SED podcast, featuring conversations with leaders of the energy transition, hosted by Smart Energy Decisions' own Deborah Channel. In each episode of Smart Energy Voices, Deborah digs deep with industry movers and shakers to reveal insights you can learn from in their stories, personalities, and visions for the future. All right, let's dive in.
Welcome, everyone. I'm Deborah Channel from Smart Energy Decisions, and I'm so glad you're here back with us at Smart Energy Voices. If you've been enjoying the podcast, please take a minute to share it with your coworkers or peers or someone that you know who would benefit from this content. And we have a very personal story to share today as we welcome the founder and CEO of the Energy Equity Group, Brittany Boyd. And the EEG works with corporations who are committed to an equitable and just transition to clean energy. So welcome, Brittany.
I appreciate you guys giving me this platform.
Why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and your background, and then we'll get into what EEG does.
So like you mentioned, CEO and founder, pretty new to the entrepreneurial space. I'm 37 years old. I grew up in a township that's about 10 minutes outside of Philadelphia in income-based housing with my grandma and my mom. And if you don't know what income-based housing is exactly what it sounds like. Your rent is based off of how much money you make. So if you make a lot, your rent is more. But in those downturns in your career and throughout your life, they give you rent assistance and the rent goes down. So I lived in a low-income neighborhood. Where I lived, 98% of the people in my neighborhood were Black. But my high school, we only made up 35% of the student population. So I lived in a very segregated neighborhood. My mom graduated from the first integrated class from that high school. And there was actually a pool in my neighborhood that I could not swim in. Of course, it didn't say we don't accept Black people, but it was membership only. And Black people were denied memberships. So that pool is no longer open. If anybody was wondering, they filled it with cement. They would rather it be cemented versus integration.
I want to stop for a minute because it was interesting that you did say you were 37. So we have some context here. And I think that might surprise a lot of people. That is not so old to have experienced some of this. We think it's a long time ago and it's not.
Yes, yes. So my neighborhood was very segregated. Well, although Philadelphia was only 10 minutes away from where I lived, because of the reputation, it was a tough place to live. It was a lot of crime went on in the city of Philadelphia. Once you moved to the outside or the outskirts of Philadelphia, you really weren't allowed back as a young person. You usually had to go back with an adult. So during the Christmas holidays, I got to go shopping with my mom and my grandma in Philadelphia because that's where all the good shopping was in the inner city. So we would go into the city, and that was really my first experience seeing different races of people, different cultures, different political backgrounds living side by side next to each other. So that was really inspiring for me to see when I went into the city. Christmas time, everyone thinks it's because of all the presents. No, it was my only time that I got to go into the city and really experience an integrated lifestyle. I loved the food, the culture, the people. It always exceeded my expectations every time I went into the city, regardless of the reputation. Throughout high school, I excelled. I was an honor roll student, despite having to overcome undiagnosed dyslexia. I earned the opportunity to go to the Fox Chase School of Business at Temple University. After 2 years of living in Philadelphia, really immersed in that culture, I met my husband. We've been together for 15 amazing years. We have 2 sons, 1 artist, 1 athlete. So I'm really just truly blessed from that retrospect. I get to go to football games and art galleries. It's the best. And for that reason alone, Philly always has the most special place in my heart. Go Birds.
All right. We have a cheerleader here. Okay. We'll take that. All right. So you mentioned you went to college and you started your career in sales.
Yes.
Which I think is interesting. So tell us where you were in sales and how you got to clean energy from that.
Yeah, so I had what I thought was a really successful career back in Philadelphia. I kind of climbed the corporate ladder to assistant store manager at a Fortune 7 telecommunications company. I got to sell a multitude of things. I mean, I sold clothing, hair, shoes, telephones, clean energy. So just an array of products. And then in all parts of the country, working for the telecommunications company that I did, I was offered the opportunity to live in California, Florida, Georgia, really just expanding the horizons of my family. So I'm forever grateful for my experiences there. But as I excelled in my career, I started to give up little bits and pieces of my authenticity for success. It was just the around the way girl from Philly was just not cutting it in corporate America at that time. And I started to change the way that I wore my hair. I talked differently. I expressed myself differently, which usually meant not at all. That's the best. Usually that's the safest space is to just be emotionless. And after 10 years of success in the telecom industry, having great leaders and amazing training, I started to suffer from survivor's remorse and even more imposter syndrome. And I feel like I have a different definition for imposter syndrome. A lot of people feel like imposter syndrome makes people feel like I'm not supposed to be here. And I know I'm supposed to be in all the places I am. I'm pretty awesome. It is the imposter that I have to be there. The change in the way that I am in order to be in that space. So I started to suffer from that a bit and leaving Philadelphia to pursue my dreams and really have my dreams come true. I was reporting to the person who I ultimately wanted to be in corporate America. So I was right at the cusp of success, real success. But the survivor's remorse and the imposter syndrome just took me to a place that made me want to start anew. So after 10 years in the industry of telecommunications, I started looking for new opportunities that presented me with the chance to impact more communities like the ones that I came from, which are low income and under-resourced. I like to call myself a low income alumni. That's what I tell people, because I can vividly remember those days. And clean energy stood out to me as the most scalable industry that I could use my skills that I had already acquired to make an impact, and using the very authenticity that I gave up to actually be a difference maker. So that's why I got into clean energy.
Interesting. Okay. And first of all, I really appreciate the personal point of view on that. I think it's really interesting to see where people come from and where they land. So tell us about, in terms of starting the Energy Equity Group, how did that start? And tell us a little bit about the missions and goals.
So coming into the clean energy industry was a whirlwind of information. I mean, I learned so much in a year. The people who I met couldn't believe it. And I've really just been blessed to have a unique way of learning because of my dyslexia. I learned through doing and through watching. So I would need the computer or for someone else to read to me for me to understand what was being read. And now with computers being able to do the read aloud, I'm unstoppable now. I can read a book a day now. So being able to overcome those obstacles and learn all the information and the overwhelming support from the industry all really got me thinking, how can I have a bigger impact than just being a sales representative and selling someone else's products? So that's how I kind of started the EEG. Energy events, just like the Smart Energy Decision Makers Net Zero Forum coming up, those are the events that really geared the market research for me identifying what was needed in the industry and creating the Energy Equity Group to meet those needs.
I was looking, of course, at your website, and the mission of EEG, it says it was founded to offer authentic and meaningful environmental justice services to corporations committed to an equitable and just transition to clean energy. So that's a big job, number one. And so authenticity comes into it in your mission statement. It's built into what you're doing here. So let's talk a little bit about how the group functions. And corporate partnerships are key for you. And I know you're also at the very beginning stages of this. So we're getting in on the ground floor here, learning about what you do. So tell us in your and it's not a dream, you've made it a reality, but in your dream of this, how you want it to work and how you want to work with these companies?
We want to work with all companies across all sectors. Our aim is to make the transactions more seamless in that there are mutually beneficial outcomes for all stakeholders involved. We plan to connect with corporate partners at events like you all's and provide industry insight. So firsthand industry insight. I was actually speaking to a service provider, I'll leave them unnamed, and I was telling them how we can verify the low income circumstances of an individual through their EBT card. And that service provider asked, "What's an EBT card?" Now, that immediately struck for me to say, hey, if the decision makers in these transactions aren't quite sure what an EBT card is, there's definitely a disconnect between the actual households that we're trying to impact and the people that we need to invest in these outcomes. So the Energy Equity Group provides authenticity and also credibility for corporations and service providers within these communities to say, we may not know it all. We may not come from those backgrounds. We may not be historically marginalized, but we're working with corporations who have firsthand experiences overcoming those obstacles. So authenticity plays a big part in what we do and what we offer. And that's why it's all over the website, because I do believe that that's one of the things that the clean energy industry is missing when it comes to the administration of environmental justice, is just actual person who may have come from those circumstances. And some of this stuff you can't read in the book. I mean, the energy industry has some of the smartest people I've ever encountered in my life. I mean, just genius level. And sometimes that doesn't always translate into someone who is coming out of poverty and hasn't been offered the same opportunities and couldn't imagine getting to a PhD, just trying to graduate high school without having any kind of mishaps. So the authenticity in helping corporations and service providers understand those circumstances without making them feel bad, it's not anyone's fault, but it's everyone's responsibility to fix.
It's interesting, and it's become a buzzword, but meeting people where they are. It sounds like what you're doing is you're the bridge,
yes,
between the corporations and the lower income people that they may not encounter and may not understand what all the issues are. So that's pretty interesting.
Yeah. And we really look to leverage throughout working with corporations internally and externally. So I worked in the business department. So me and my COO, we have a lot of internal business experience as well as corporate outreach for sales. So utilizing that 25 years of combined experience to speak the language of the corporation, because what people don't realize is corporations generally buy a lot of their goods and services in the same manner. Whether it's the government, for example, whether it's toilet paper or renewable energy credits, they're going through the same SAM.gov service and platform. So understanding that and understanding that the person who is making this decision is making a lot of different decisions for a lot of different products and services possibly is going to be key to getting these deals done and moving this clean energy transition forward.
So let's talk about what we're calling the rules of the road. And you mentioned a little bit, sales 101, some of these skills that you've picked up elsewhere, you're bringing into this industry. But what are the rules of the road for your company and operating?
Well, the number one rule in sales in general is sales ABCs, and that's always be closing. There are so many great and phenomenal ideas and concepts out there in the industry, but without proper closing techniques and skills, they will always be concepts and ideas. They'll never come to fruition or realization. So having the mindset of always be closing is key in any type of transactional based deal or encounter. And the second one, which I really believe should be number one, and that's operate with integrity. People don't always buy the best product or from the company that they feel has the best service, but they will buy from the person that they connected with and the person that they liked. So operating with integrity has to be at the top of your platform when you're dealing with any type of transactional based opportunities. And a few things you want to do is keep your word. Always do what you say you're going to do. say what's right, not what sounds right. It's all that you can always tell when someone's telling you what you want to hear versus what the actual thing actually is. And last, let your actions speak louder than your words. I hear a lot of talk. There's a lot of talk that goes around of all of these amazing things that people want to do. And the EEG is going to have those people put their money where their mouths are. If you want to impact these communities, you want to be a positive role model for other corporations, then the time is now to move. And I do believe that providing that authentic insight is going to help the most. So operating with integrity is I feel like should always be number one. But any sales professional would yell at me because the number one rule of sales is always be close it.
True. That's what they would say. But the great advice, I mean, for sales and for anything, those rules are pretty important. And something I want to go back to, you talked about bringing concepts into fruition, into reality. And two of the concepts that are front and center in your approach, and we'll take them one by one, but corporate responsibility and additionality. So in practical terms, what does corporate responsibility mean?
So this term, when I came into the industry, it really gave me hope. Hope for communities, hope for economic relief, hope for our planet. As a sales leader, I would always tell my direct reports, it's okay to make mistakes. It is inevitable. Corporations provide the soundtrack to our lives, the products that we use daily. It is inevitable on the way to progression that mistakes will be made. Accountability is the most important thing. Standing up for what you did, saying, hey, I know I did that, and there's a better way that I can do it, and here's the better way that we're going to do that. And with the EEG, we'll make sure we're working with us, your employees, your customer base, all of your stakeholders know that you are invested in the economic relief, in the upliftment of low-income, energy-burdened communities. Yes, we are the largest producers of fossil fuels and greenhouse gases, but we are taking accountability for our actions by uplifting our client base, by uplifting our employees. In a way that is genuine, in a way that they can feel dignified about receiving this relief.
Okay. And what about the concept into reality for additionality?
So I'll start by defining what I found online for additionality. So additionality is defined as the property of an activity being additional by adding something new to the context. It is a determination of whether an intervention has an effect when compared to the baseline. Interventions can take a variety of forms, but often include economic incentives. Now, I know all of the clean energy folks is like, where is she? When is she going to talk about capacity to the grid? And yes, additionality in that form is much needed and definitely something that corporations should get behind. But we are seeing a lot of challenges when it comes to getting new projects on the line, whether it's the pipeline not being there from suppliers or interconnection issues. So we shouldn't abandon the concept altogether. There are different things that we can create because that's really what it comes down to, creation. And the Energy Equity Group is looking to create economic relief for low-income communities with a laser focus on creation. Additive measures are great. We should continue to do all of the things the Energy Equity Group is not here to take social justice from one area into another. It's to be additive. We need all of these measures if we want to genuinely make an impact on the people that are living in poverty. We will never cease demand. It's even in the Bible. There will always be poor amongst you. So we need all of the efforts possible, and that is going to include creation of programs, and we aim to create. So if you are looking to create new things for low-income and energy-burdened communities, the Energy Equity Group is the company that you want to work with. There are some amazing corporations out there doing community solar and Boys and Girls Club donations and the Red Cross. But we want to come in and provide something for individual households that says, hey, we see you. And we know that this is not a handout. This is something that you deserve based on years and years of marginalization.
Okay. And finally, we're just about the end of our time. And again, I thank you for sharing so much of your personal story. And I want to go back to the personal one more time. because your efforts and your passion for clean energy and for helping the communities that you came from, in a lot of ways, they were strengthened through your relationship with some mentors that you had. So talk about that a little bit and tell us what you learned from them.
Mentors will be the cornerstone for integrating more Black professionals into the industry. It's something we talk about a lot. It's something that I know that the industry is looking to get more involved in. But we need more mentors that are willing to give transparent and authentic, there's that word again, feedback to people like me. I will say I have one mentor right now that is just blowing my socks off with the amount of information that she's providing to me and the lack of judgment that she has when I have all of these seem to be baseline, really, really generic style questions for running a business. Her name's Sadie Gronk of the Energy Bees. And she asked me one day, she said, "Why do you trust me with all of this? Like, you're telling me your life story. You're telling me everything. Why do you trust me?" And I told her, I was like, "You're great. And I don't want this to take away from the greatness that you are, because you are great and I appreciate you. But I'm going to tell you something that's probably going to shock you. I don't have a choice. I don't have any uncles or family members that are business owners that could fill these gaps for me. And there are a majority of people that came from the same circumstances that I came from that will not do what I've done. And they will not open up in the way that I have. I mean, it took me up until now to open up about my upbringing. And for a long time, I hid it. I made it seem like I was from the suburbs of Philadelphia. So that, you know, I had something to talk about at the mixer, and it wasn't how, you know, we didn't always have enough food or how we went to the local food pantry for food. So mentorship in a way that makes a person like me comfortable is super important. And I just had to shout Sadie out. Things I've learned in general, just from the different people that I've met at a lot of these events, is that the industry could shy away from having the authentic conversations that are necessary in order for these transitions to be pushed forward. So these are conversations that I would usually shy away from. And now they are conversations that I'm here to promote. So that is super exciting to just get validation on. And then I also learned that the authentic presence that I bring to the industry was needed as well. And that it was no longer a hindrance, but a gift that I'll be able to provide this authentic perspective for corporations to say, genuinely and honestly, "Hey, we don't have all the answers, but we know someone who comes from your community, who's passionate about bringing you up to standard, and we're working alongside them." And that's what genuine authentic is, not gaslighting, perpetrating, making it seem as if you're doing something when you're really not. I think that's where our famous term of greenwashing comes in. But you can greenwash in the communities as well. So we just want to make sure that households are being properly taken, accounted for. And my mentors throughout the time and the amazing support that I've received throughout the industry has let me know that this type of work is needed and it needs to be scaled. And we're looking to touch every low-income household in the U.S. as a first step.
Well, that I have to say is a great place to end it, but it's really just the beginning for you. And I really thank you for sharing your story. And I hope the corporates and all the organizations out there are listening and are learning something from this. I think you had a lot of good advice in here. So, Brittany Boy, thank you so much. Everybody check out the Energy Equity Group. We'll have some information in the show notes on that. So thanks for your time today. I really appreciate it. And also, as always, thanks to our listeners for engaging on our content and for being part of the Smart Energy Decisions community. If you enjoyed the episode, subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. Tell your colleagues and peers about it. Tell your corporate friends and organizations.
Please.
Get them involved. And also, to learn about how you can become part of our next event, visit our website at smartenergydecisions.com. We're excited about sharing these conversations with leaders of the energy transition in this podcast, on our website, and at our events. And it's all in the interest of helping you make those smart energy decisions. So thanks, everyone.
Thanks for listening to Smart Energy Voices, an SED podcast. Digest the insights from today's episode and take action on the ideas that have inspired you. Join us every Friday for conversations with smart energy leaders. To keep up to date with trends and happenings in the energy transition, visit smartenergydecisions.com to register for our daily newsletter and become part of the Smart Energy Decisions community.